This is why we love racing in all its forms.
Max Delight shot through, grabbed the lead. Max Delight wins it.
The rail now for Zipping Rambo goes through in the Sandown Cup.
Very elegant. 10 group ones and now the greatest of them all, the Melbourne Cup.
For the next hour, RSN is cracking the codes.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Cracking the Codes. Matt Stewart and Simone Fisher could be back again. We've got a good show lined up today. Pretty busy day, isn't it? Certainly in the harness world, because we've got Group 1 Ballarat Cup, but we're at the Valley today. Matt, been a busy week. We've had Sandown and Flemington have meetings this week. The norm seems to be a twilight, and yet the one track that's actually got lights is not racing twilight time.
Oh, it's just full of irony. Full of irony.
Isn't it?
And that just worked out. This is my second Cracking the Codes in a row, so this is almost a 12-month record for
record.
Me. So, the Valleys, we don't race there very often during the daytime, as you say, Dan, so it's a little bit special to do it. And rapid racing was last night, which is an interesting concept, and the Ballarat Cup, Simone, tonight. And we're going to delve into the Ballarat Cup because of all my memories of harness racing, the two most stark memories are the great bullying of Brian Gath on Natalie Rasmussen, Safari versus Blacks of Fake, and also the, do we call it Sulky Gate, Dan?
Yeah, I think so, Sulky Gate, yep. The year that 6 of the 10 runners were late scratchings, including 4 that were trained by Emma Stewart, 2 trained by David Aiken, left a field of 4 in 2014, the second running of 2014, because that actually changed the date from January to December. And that's what happened. So it's hard to forget that particular race. But look, the race itself, over the years, it's a Group 1. It's got a wonderful history with some great horses winning it.
Yeah, it was. We did. It was dubbed Sulky Gate. Everything, Simone, controversial in the last 20 years always has to be something gate, you know. Curse Watergate for that.
Watergate.
yeah, it was the Aridge. It was, for those listeners who aren't aware, it was a fascinating way it played out with the gear, the sulkies deemed to be too wide and sort of deemed illegal, even though they'd been well used, and then absolute chaos in the Ballarat Cup when most of the field got wiped out. And I'm not sure what the ripple effect was, Dan Ree, culpability and fallout. Do you have any memory of what happened afterwards?
I do. Well, I certainly remember the lead-up because I could see it happening. And as I said, Emma and Clayton had 4 in the race, David Aiken too. That's just the Cup, let alone some of the other races. And as the night was going along, it started off fine and there were rumblings here and there about the policing of the standard sizes and lengths of these sulkies. And they were out marginally, but to be fair, that those sulkies had been used in the days and weeks previously to some degree. And anyway, I could see it happening, and I won't forget getting on the public address system about half an hour before the Ballarat Cup, and I've never done this before, but I said, I apologise that I have to make this announcement. And then I ran through the late scratchings in the Cup, and they were top horses. We're talking horses like Guaranteed, Restrepo, Philadelphia Man, Beauty Secret, Cold Major, and it just ripped the race apart and left a field of 4, and one of those 4 was a 300-to-1 shot.
So, Dan, what can you just explain what the benefit was of these bigger carts or the disadvantage of them? What was the it's only a tiny margin that we're talking in length or size, but what was it supposed to do or not supposed to do?
Oh, look, I just think that it was newer, more streamlined. I think it was more Americanized, perhaps. I mean, I don't know the intricacies of the actual carts themselves, but they didn't just happen to be used that night. They'd been used in the lead-up, at least for a short time. More and more stables were getting them. They're not cheap to get either, they well, seemingly were approved, but officially they weren't under the race conditions. So I think it came as a bit of a shock to a lot of people on track. There could be altering stories to that coming from the Harness Race in Victoria's perspective, but it decimated the race, and it's a night that will be remembered more likely for the wrong reasons.
Did they ever get approved?
I'm not sure.
Like, I think the sulkies that are used now, they're not those ones that were that failed in that Ballarat Cup, didn't pass the test?
Look, unless they've trimmed them down in size and shape slightly, well, we're only talking about centimetres here, but that's fair enough. Some of these carts, they're pretty wide anyway, and I'm sure there was good reason for it. It's just the timing of when that was brought in was the part that really hurt. And you could see it happening hours before it happened. You're just thinking, why isn't this done on a day, on a Monday at Stall or Melton or something like that, not Ballarat Cup night, when you have a genuine Group 1, it always has been. Anyway, this is the aftermath. When I say the aftermath, this is what we were left with. In 2014, in December, the Ballarat Cup with what was left to be a field of four.
I'm Cause and Terror got away on Uncle Wingnut. To the outside is Terror to Love. Turning for home, it's the two Terrors. And it's I'm Cause and Terror getting away. Terror to Love to the outside, winding up. I'm Cause and Terror, 5 metres. Terror to Love pegging him back. I'm Cause and Terror from Terror to Love. I'm Cause and Terror in front. I'm Cause and Terror, Terror to Love flying at him. It's going to be a terrorising victory, but it's not the one punters wanted most. I'm Cause and Terror won it. Beat Terror to Love. Third place to Uncle Wingnut.
That was a very good call there, Dan. A bit like your Lyle Creek call that year when you predicted him to get beat. That was Malecki at his finest.
Well, I only had four horses to get through. So for a 2,700 metre race, you think of that. They didn't change order too much, let me
actually
tell you.
Actually, you're right. It wasn't that good. Simone.
Oh, thank you, Matthew.
During the race, the horses were just in that 1, 2, 3, 4 order for quite some time, weren't they? So you're trying to keep the audience engaged when there wasn't really a lot happening for a lot of the race. But the end of the race was quite exciting.
It was.
It was. It was just a crescendo to a long race. And what turned out to be the short prize favourite ended up running second, the New Zealand star, Terror to Love. He was a star. When they tried to do the presentations after the race, the crowd were booing, and not, or understandably so as well. So it left a lot of people a bit miffed. It did spoil the night. And I must admit, it took a while, I think, for the Ballarat Club to recover from that. I think it handicapped them. And, I mean, they've had some wonderful cups since then, but it certainly hurt them and the race that night.
Simone, question without notice. You love these. Because this will be a lead into the other Ballarat Cup that we're going to replay, which is the most amazing harness race in my memory. I know there was that Truel Memorial that year, Dan, with the Francos and, you know, and Poppy Gamelite and so on. But Simone, what is there a greyhound race for the epic contest that sticks out in your mind, even in maybe in recent times, or is there one where you go, oh, that's the greatest race of all time, or something like that?
I think. The duel between Fernando Bale and Dinah Double One in the Melbourne Cup, when we all thought Fernando was going to win and Dinah Double One won. I think that one in modern times will be one that most people would pull out of the memory. yeah, you've put me on a spot, Matt, so I probably can't come up with anything else.
Yeah, but that's a good one. You did come up with a good one. And, you know, obviously Bonecrusher, Waverley Star and all that, Dan. But to me, it was Safari, Black Safake, and there's a lot in the Ballarat Cup, and there's a lot more to it than just being a tooth and nail stoush. So why don't we listen to the replay, then you can tell us about why there was more to this race than met the eye.
Blacks are fake, Safari the outside. They're 8 metres clear of Report for Duty, good looking girl. Safari, Blacks are fake. They are locked together. It's a stirring duel. Blacks are fake, Safari. Safari, Blacks are fake, and Safari won it. What a win. Safari has beaten Blacks are fake, third good looking girl. Then
Now, what year was it, Dan? And we did speak to, I've interviewed Brian Gath about it, and he did talk about how centimetre daring his drive was and the reaction from Natalie Rasmussen on the runner-up, who was a legend himself. So tell us about that edition of the Ballarat Cup.
It was 2008, and Brian Gath, I suppose he used fairly intimidatory tactics to, at different stages, laying on top of eyeball and actually sort of half-length Blacks are fake most of the way. So he would be laying in, and it just got... You can imagine a footballer that was being worn by another footballer, you know, just followed and grabbed and touched and doing everything legally enough to get away with it, but pushing the boundaries at the same time. And I know Nat was fuming after the race. I think even Brian had said that and pushed her buttons, but he was out there to win. They were very confident. Clayton Tonkin, a trainer of Safari, that he could win, and he did it. and they were at it for virtually the whole race. It was quite extraordinary. We talk about Bone Crusher Waverley Star from about the 800 metres. Well, this is virtually from the very start of a 2,700 metre race. They were pretty much at it, and they ran very fast time, and shows you how good both horses were. I think Natalie might have thought about a protest, but it didn't, wasn't sort of forthcoming because Brian didn't go over. Maybe in some people's eyes he did, but he didn't, to the letter of the law, go over. It was an extraordinary race. What, everyone remembers it. I mean, it's a race that you'll never forget, Matt. Most people won't forget as being one of the greatest harness races of all time, let alone being perhaps the best Ballarat Cup.
Yeah, exactly. And Simone, Blacks of Fake was one of the greatest horses of all time, and he won, I think, four Inter Dominions, Dan, or five?
Four wins and 2 seconds.
And I think my respect for Blacks of Fake came not from those amazing wins in the biggest, you know, the Inter Dominion and so on. His greatness to me was in that defeat to Safari, because they went at it. He had a lot of soft wins too, Blacks of Fake, but he was up against a genuine champion in Safari, never shirked, and possibly could have won had it not been for the daring tactics of the legend Brian Gass. So to me, it was the defeat of Blacks of Fake that made me realise how great he was, you know, and then you had the context of all the other wins. So it happens that way sometimes, Simone, doesn't it? In defeat, you respect a greyhound or a horse more than sometimes in victory.
You do, and I'm trying to think of another example off the top of my head, but I can't, and I'm sure once we finish this show, something will jump out at me, Matt. But I just remember Blacks of Fake. He dominated racing for such a long time, didn't he? I was doing a lot of Sky broadcasting at that time, so obviously you're working, and the harness racing's on as well, and he just seemed to be in week after week after week and winning Group 1 races or the biggest races. So he's certainly a household name, Blacks of Fake, but another household name, Dan, tonight in the Ballarat Cup, Lochinvar Art. And look, I'm not a dyed-in-the-wool type of harness racing enthusiast, but I certainly looked at that race, his Shepherd and Cup run, and like everyone, and I thought it was a terrific run last Saturday night. And he did a terrific job for a horse that hadn't been racing for 12 months. So, Dan, Lochinvar Art tonight, is he a big chance, do you think?
Look, I don't know. It's a stronger race, and he obviously needed the run last week. I think that was clear, hence why he's on the quick backup. And I don't know. I think there's a bit of a line in the sand race from my point of view. I actually thought he was a little bit disappointing, but that might just come down to him not being ready for a 2,700-metre race first up. So we'll gauge more from tonight, but he is the selling point. He's still the marquee horse. The Hunter Cup is a couple of weeks away, so it's a run that he needs to have, and depending on what happens tonight, David Moran will then decide whether he would even back him up a third week in a row in the Casey Classic next week in Melton.
Well, looking forward to Ballarat Cup night tonight. Guest-wise today, guys, Simone, you're going to touch on a woman who we adore, and we'll learn a bit more about that with Mel soon, but another one is Debbie Weymouth, the legendary picnic heroine who had a terrible fall at Woolamai last Saturday and was airlifted to the Alfred with all sorts of terrible injuries, including 9 broken ribs. I think we've only got 12, and other terrible injuries as well. But she's tough as old boots, and her equally tough daughter, Beck, is going to join us on Cracking the Codes this morning. Just to give an update on mum and also to reflect on this incredible career through racing and social community eras of you know, the emergence of women, and especially in the racetrack as well, and the transition from the lipstick races of the ladies' bracelets to people like Debbie being competitive day in, day out with the male riders on the picnic circuit. And then, of course, we saw it at the pros as well. So looking forward to having a chat to Beck about a woman who I think should end up in the Hall of Fame. And I think there's another one that we could throw a nomination in for as well.
Oh, definitely. So we've had this guest on a number of times before on Cracking the Codes, but someone who always has so much to offer for the greyhound racing industry, and that is vet nurse and head vet nurse at the Sandown Vet Clinic, Melanie Tochner. And she's gone off on another little venture that's very entertaining, but very true, and a great promotion for greyhound racing. So we're going to have a chat to Mel about her latest little promotional tool, and really
give us a hint.
Forward to the chat.
Give us a hint.
Well, it comes along the lines of a song, a very, very popular song, and let's hope that Billy Joel is not an anti-racing activist, because he may not like what Mel's done to We Didn't Start the Fire, but we absolutely love it, so can't wait to hear all about it.
Well, Billy Joel, in one of his songs, he likes to cruise the Miracle Mile, so by the sounds of that, he's into racing of some sort.
It may be a different Miracle
is
Mile.
Is that Born to Run?
That's Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, sorry, I had Bruce Springsteen on my mind. Yeah.
Well, Billy Joel does have. Well, he did have a very. Is he still?
Is that the one with the white rimmed tires? That saw you.
Yes.
Song talking about with Miracle Mile. Yeah.
I don't know. But sorry, is he still married? Is he still married to Christy Brinkley? Because she was
the Uptown Girl, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was the Uptown Girl.
I remember that film clip, Dan. When you were a 14-year-old boy, did you remember that film clip too?
Yeah, absolutely. I think any 14-year-old boy would have.
That's what Paul's buttons were for. Hey,
it's all rock and roll to me. It's still rock and roll to me was the song.
Yes, indeed. Hey, you're listening to Cracking the Codes. It's a Saturday morning. Mini Valley races are on today. Ballarat Cup tonight, so there's a lot going on. We're going to take a break, and first up, we're going to have a chat to the daughter of the legend, Beck Weymouth.
Loving their racing, pacing and chasing. Matt Stewart, Dan Malicki and Simone Fisher. Cracking the Codes.
Guys, there's been almost a daily vigil for updates on the condition of a certain 66-year-old woman at the Alfred Hotel, Alfred Hospital, which may be a hotel to some. And the reason for that is that Debbie Weymouth is an absolute icon of the racing game and certainly the picnic circuit. And she had a terrible fall at Woolamai last Saturday, and she banged herself up badly. And we wanted to have a chat to her daughter, Beck, to get an update on Debbie, and also reflect on the incredible longevity, riding through various important eras of Australian racing and Australian society, as she has, and that was the career, or has been the career, of Debbie Weymouth. So great to have a chat to her daughter, Beck, to get an update on her condition and tell a bit of her life story. How are you, Beck?
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, no, we're getting sort of better every day. So, progress has been good with mum. So, I think we're all feeling a little bit happier and a little bit more at ease than we were at the start of the week. So that's great.
So just a few scratches, really. Only 9 broken ribs, sort of a crack to the jaw.
We've only got 12.
It's up to 12 now.
No. I think we've only got 12.
Oh, 9 of 12. Yes, 9 of 12. So
9 of 12.
But she's made of steel, your mum, isn't she?
She is. She's tough as old boots, and she's progressing well, and she's been transferred to a ward now. The only issue with that is she didn't have much sleep last night. She had a restless kid in her ward and a snoring man. So, look, she's pretty keen to get out. So, hopefully the jaw operation can go ahead and we can get her out as soon as we can, get her home to rest and recover.
Beck, she's had a distinguished career in the saddle, and when you reflect back on how long she's been riding, it's quite extraordinary. I hope she doesn't mind us saying how old she is. Well, you can say it on our behalf, okay? But it's the 48th straight year that she's been riding, which is amazing.
Oh, it certainly is, considering that she's given birth to 2 children during that period as well. She's an absolute machine, and she loves it. And, she really is quite passionate about the sport and the horses. And like, even when I spoke to her on Saturday night before they put her into the induced coma, first thing she wanted to know was the horse all right? She's the longevity of it, and the desire and everything like that certainly always been there. And like I said, it is phenomenal to think that she's ridden for 48 consecutive seasons, and she's still enjoying it as much.
Beck, it sounds like you've been brought up in a very horsey family, and often as a parent of a horse rider, it can be quite nerve-wracking watching your child go over the jumps or even be on a racehorse, whatever it may be. So what's it like as a child looking at their mother, who's of that age as well, still getting up on these thoroughbreds, and we know they can be a little bit unpredictable at times? And do you have a fear, or is it so ingrained in you, horses and horsemanship, and you know it so well that you just wish her luck?
Look, I just know that she's very good at what she does, and even on the weekend, the incident certainly wasn't through any fault of hers. She's more than capable. She loves it. If she wasn't, she sort of wouldn't be doing it. So, I certainly don't have any sort of fear when she goes out there. I mean, it's unfortunate sort of what happened, but, you know, she's ridden 48 consecutive seasons without an incident like this. And, she's more than capable. She's actually very good at sort of reading a race and everything like that. So, we just let her do her thing and away she goes.
It is a wee bit in her DNA, isn't it? So, Dad Bill, top-class jumps jockey, Grand National Hurdle winner. Butch, your brother, legend, 4 grand annuals. And then there's Robert, her brother. There's Rowan. And then there's the Weymouth side of the family that as well, which is obviously Charlie and all these sort of things all thrown in as well. So it's all a mishmash of Weymouths and Londrigans is what I'm saying.
Yeah, 100%. There was no... there's a fair bit of racing blood in there, and the Londrigans are renowned for their sort of stoutness through the jumping connection, and, you know, her brothers growing up with Uncle Bill and Uncle Butch, she sort of had to be tough because away she went with the boys, and off they rode their ponies and did show jumping and that.
I was going to say, Mum, where she's at the moment, is there any chance she can lose some desire at the age that she is, and we'll say 66, does she lose any desire, or does it make her more determined to go on for a couple of more years riding, but obviously to get to that stage? Tell us about what's going to have to happen for her to get back to normal. What sort of period of time is she going to be on the sidelines for?
Look, unfortunately, sort of with COVID, we sort of haven't had a great deal of contact with the doctors to get a great idea of the timeline. But from my own Dr. Google research, I think that sort of ribs are around your 8 to 12 weeks, and the jaw will sort of be around the 6 weeks. So she does have a long road to recovery, but, you know, the main thing is we'll just get her healthy and fit. And she was pretty keen yesterday to get back out there. So, you know, look, all those decisions will be made by her and solely by her, and we'll support her whichever way she wants to go. But there was certainly no talk of not getting back out there.
Speaking of a long road, her whole career has been a long road. And I did a bit of a mishmash of looking at some audio and videos and so on to sort of piece together elements of her story for a story I've written for Winning Post this week. And some interviews with your mum, obviously, started writing track work. It's either 12 or 13 at St. Arnold for Dad.
Because the boys had sort of gone off, Uncle Bill and Butch. And so it was, all right, your turn, away you go. So, and sort of, I can remember she sort of said to me, Pa said, you know, it'll stop when it gets tired, you'll be right. Because she said, what if I can't hold it? You'll be right, it'll stop when it gets tired. away she went. So, yeah, no, she's, and like I said, you know, she certainly has had the longevity, and she's ridden through the different periods of not only sort of racing but socialisation as well. Like, you know, it was, they sort of just had the ladies' bracelets where the ladies were only allowed to ride against the ladies. And then
Tell us about the ladies' bracelets, because I find it fascinating to think back that there was a time not that long ago in your mum's career where there was that segregation of the male and female riders, and they were called the lipstick riders because they were the girls. And tell us about that period. And then there was, because I was talking to the Keenans, Max, young Max, talking about riding against Debbie in recent times and what a ferocious competitor she was. But then also Tiger, his father, who was talking about how he's still got a race book from the ladies' bracelet days, and it was a race meeting at Healesville where he said, I didn't compete against Debbie, but I was always there with Debbie, but she was always in the ladies' bracelets. It's incredible to think that quite recently that there was such segregation.
Oh, look, 100%. 100%. It sort of blows your mind now. But, they really enjoyed their ladies' bracelets, and they just kept pioneering to have, you know, a lot more of an even playing field, you know, and you've got your leading jockeys, like, you know, you've got Jamie Carr in Victoria, Rachel King in New South Wales, and Claire Lindoff in South Australia. So I think, you know, through their perseverance and that, they really have achieved what they wanted, and it all come, you know, stemmed from a love of the sport.
I remember, I'd say it must have been, I reckon in the 80s even, there were still ladies' bracelets. They would have one at Moonee Valley. I remember Jenny Chapman. I'm sure Mum was in there as well.
Yeah, I reckon I've heard a tape of you possibly even calling that. And, you know, through those ladies' bracelets, Mum's made, you know, she's got a great friendship with Jenny Chapman and all those types of, you know, riders, Diane Wynne. So, yeah, it's, you know, obviously like friendships and that were made, but they were really the pioneers for sort of female jockeys today.
Beck, when you think of these pioneering type of women, it's happened across all three codes, and there was a lady in greyhounds called Pat Haas who actually pioneered the way and allowed women to handle greyhounds and train their own greyhounds. So have you had the conversation with Mum? Does she look back with a sense of pride, or is there some sort of resentment as well that she's worked so hard to get to this point and open the floodgates for these young women jockeys coming through? Because I could imagine myself it would just be something that, you know, it's been so hard to navigate throughout your career. And then suddenly you've done what you set out to achieve in some sort of a way, but perhaps can't have enjoyed it as much as what these jockeys are today.
Yeah, it's really weird. She's sort of very humble, and to her it's never been about male or female. So I wouldn't even, like, really say that that's sort of like a thought that really comes up to her. For her it's always been the love of the horse and the love of the sport. So, like, I probably don't think she probably realises the effect that she's had on it. But that's very much Mum. Like, she does it because of her own sort of passion and the passion for the horse and the sport. But she sort of, you know, she certainly hasn't got her bra off swinging it around her head.
Like Simone.
You know, yeah, well, that's right.
Don't listen to him.
But, yeah, look, I think if you pulled it apart, then she probably realised. But it's certainly something that she doesn't talk about. And, you know, probably to a point she may even get a little bit embarrassed about it when people say, because that certainly wasn't something she set out to do. But it is, like, a great byproduct of just her passion.
I'll ask you about someone. Michael Felgate actually suggested earlier this week on radio that Debbie Weymouth will have to be very soon included in the Racing Hall of Fame, and there's a very good justification for it. I mean, on the raw stats, you know, Jamie Carr's prize money is $45 million, and, you know, 1,036 winners, and Debbie's is just over 200 for $250,000 in stake money. But that's got nothing to do with it. It's got to do with the impact, the longevity, the what she's represented through those eras that we spoke about. And
yeah, 100%.
One thing that was I thought was really lovely, Beck, and I think your mum would love to hear this story. When I was at the picnics at Healesville when my kids were a little bit younger, about 3 years ago, their racing has always been the picnics. They've hardly ever been to Flemington. And so the heroes of the picnics have been the heroes of them in racing. And
yep.
I remember my youngest one, when your mum walked past after riding all day, and she walked straight past him towards the car park with her, you know, race gear, and he pulled at my coat and he said, Dad, that's that Debbie Weymouth. And I said, yeah. I said, she's a legend. He goes, yeah, she's amazing, you know. So, yeah, I like, she's still a legend, but, I mean, a legend of that field. And do you think that your mum should be in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't, I think, yeah, she certainly deserves a place there. Like you said, it's you know, obviously everyone sort of has different reasons to be in there, but I think certainly the longevity and the sort of withstanding the different sort of social periods and even the changes racing's gone through to still be so competitive and, you know, to still be riding so well. And everything like that, and still to be having that impact on people. Like, we've been absolutely inundated with, you know, messages of support from, you know, people wide and far, people we don't know, people that she went to pony club with, people that she may have ridden a horse that wasn't quite up to scratch at the picnics, but she gave them a full explanation, and they're like, oh, you know, we'll never forget, you know, the day your mum rode for us, and all that kind of stuff. So she has touched a lot of people sort of wide and far, and I think that's what sort of really encompasses the racing spirit.
What's your gut feeling, Beck? If she mends physically, do you think mentally she'll want to go again?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, I don't think there'll be any chance stopping her just quietly.
Well, she's won a Healesville Cup, she's won a Balnarring Cup, but if she was to have a bucket list agenda for her comeback, what would she most love to achieve on the picnic circuit if she could have another crack?
Geez, that's a really good question. I'm not 100% sure because, yeah, she's won the Healesville Cup a couple of times, and she's won the Golden Thong. She's won the Balnarring Cup and the Willamai Cup. So I think that they were probably the three pinnacles. And it was funny, even sort of former picnic jockey Courtney Pace rung on the way home from Willamai just to get the lowdown on how Mum was. And I said to her, she goes, is there anything I can do? I said, I'll make a comeback. And she said, oh, I haven't won the Valmarain Cup. So it is quite unique that Mum sort of won those three sort of more major races. But I think she'd just be happy to be back out there and being competitive.
Buchan Cup. Bucket list Buchan Cup. I didn't mean that to sound rude. I said the Buchan Cup. So, Bec, good on you. You've been so terrific over the last week or so with your availability, and everyone has been so interested in your mum's welfare, and through Facebook and all sorts of things, you've given terrific updates, as has Rowan and everyone else. So well done to you, and well done to your mum for being such a legend.
Yeah, no, like I said, we've really appreciated the support, and yeah, she was quite chuffed when I spoke to her and told her how many people have been asking after her and that. So, no, thank you for sort of giving us a platform to keep everyone updated, because, like you said, she's ridden for 48 consecutive years and she has got quite a few contacts out there, and it's a nice, effective way to keep everyone in the loop.
I can see her just dressed up to the nines with the red carpet at Crown for the Hall of Fame ceremony. That's going to be a really interesting Debbie Weymouth at the Hall of Fame ceremony. That'll be sensational.
Yeah, no.
You just go to keep her in check. You just keep her in check.
Yeah, that's right.
Good on you, Bec.
Okay, thanks very much, guys.
Nothing phases Fernando Bale.
Fabio, higher no glass, Shiraz, rapid journey, Fabregas, Marsha Bale, Beckham Bale, bombastic Shiraz. Zoom top, China trip, highly blessed, sweet it is. Neo Cleo, strike the light, powder burn a mystic ride, Fanta Bale, Whaler's dream, racing's got a new.
And I think, boys, you'll agree that that is probably the most unique introduction to an interview we have ever had on this show. But we've got a very, very unique person who has become somewhat of a regular over the time we've been recording Cracking the Codes. And that is Mel Tochner from the Sandown Vet Clinic. She is the head vet nurse there, and she's responsible for all the reproduction there. But she's shown that her talents lie in another area also, and that is in songwriting. And it's great that Mel can join us this morning on Cracking the Codes. Good morning, Mel.
Good morning.
How are you, Mel? All I could think of when I was listening to the lyrics was, wouldn't it be a great match race with all those greyhounds that kept getting reeled off in the lyrics? I think, oh, Zoom Top versus Miata and, you know, basketball. It's an amazing reflection, Mel, of just how many standout individual champions they've been through the lyrics of the song.
Amazing, isn't it? There's so many amazing dogs in there. Some that even missed out, you know, there's so many.
Well, Mel, take us right to the very start. Obviously, you've been at the Sandown Vet Clinic for a very long time, involved in the reproduction there, and you can fully agree that you've played a very strong hand in the reproduction and the producing of some of these greyhounds, haven't you? You've actually created these in the lab there at times, but take us back to how this whole concept of the song started.
I've been here 28 years, and it's just been so many amazing greyhounds that I've come across, and so many amazing people, none greater than Fernando Bale, of course. And then it was just this song came on from Billy Joel, and I'm like, God, I could just jump in so many names there and rhyme it and make every greyhound who's had an impression on me into this song, and make it also a tribute to Fernando Bale, because he just has my heart. And, and I just also wanted to touch on the history of greyhound racing, that my journey, you know, some of that history is good, some of it's bad, but it's still our history, and we should be proud of it because we've learnt from it and changed. So instead of hiding it, I wanted to reflect on it, and we can see how far we've come, you know.
Take us through the recording process, and who fronted it, and where did you do it, and how long did it take? Take us through that.
Yeah, well, I wrote the song song over a long time, a long period of time, and, you know, wake up in the night and jot things down and rhyming dogs, etc. And then I was talking to Adrian Scott next door at the club, and I pitched it to him and gave him the words. And the next minute they went and got it recorded, with Bernadette Dillon organised that, and they got a guy to record it, and they surprised me and played it to me.
So who was the recording artist?
So it's Brandon Burns, and he does a lot of the events for the club. So he has a company called Torch Productions, so then they produce the video for us. So, yeah, it all tied in nicely.
And with the video, Mel, there's a bit of a story. I'll tell my version of events here as well. So Mel had organised this video clip to be shot at the Sandown track, and it was... I believe it's been the breath, it will be, and it has been so far, just judged by the popularity of it with participants, the best promotional video for greyhounds ever, because it's all about the dog. And that particular day, there were so many Group 1 dogs on the track, and I was thrilled. I was taking some greyhounds to the clinic, wasn't I, Mel, to be de-sexed for the de-sexing program, and then
the
Simone,
yeah.
The greyhounds, yeah. Even though I'm done with children. But and Mel said, oh, Simone, she said, we need another handler. And here I was in ripped jeans and a T-shirt. And I said, I can't wear this. And she said, no, we'll find you something to wear. So she dug out a pair of scrubs out of one of the bins there in the clinic. So I was a last-minute ring-in, and got to handle my Redeemer. But, Mel, wasn't it just... amazing the support you had from stud masters, trainers, owners, turning up with these dogs at this particular day and going through this video with this production team. It was something that I'll never forget. It was quite remarkable.
Yeah, I pinched myself. The night before I was thinking, oh, what if no one turns up? They don't think it's that good of a thing. 16 Group 1 dogs turned up, and I was absolutely blown away. In fact, I wish I could have the day again to really enjoy it. I was that overwhelmed, you know.
Would have been a bad day for Kennel Cough to sweep through Sandown, wouldn't it?
Oh, God. Yeah, and we had Koblenz there, and, you know, he's the only active race dog at the time, so wanted to wrap him in cotton wool. Didn't want anything to go wrong with him because he was about to run in the Phoenix. So, yeah, it was a massive day.
At least he was in the right place, close to the veterinary clinic, so he couldn't have been closer, could he? He would have bed number one if something did happen there. Anyway, maybe inspired him to go on to greater things. Mel, tell us about after the video was completed, the song obviously recorded, put together. What was the plan then with the song? What was your idea of where it was going to be aired? Was there somewhere specific? Did you have something in mind, or is it something just for the industry to share?
I have no idea. It was for me, really. It was reflecting on my journey and how much I love Fernando Bale, and I just never think there'll be anything like him again. And it was just important to me. That was all. And I just knew we'd share it on Facebook, but nothing really. I was trying to find a way to make some money for welfare in it, you know, if we could do something for the welfare industry of greyhounds. But no, it was just done for me. It was my journey.
Yeah, but it has impact on others. Like, that's why people like you are so bloody brilliant, Mel. Simone, do you remember there was the greyhound track at Shepparton or somewhere, and these people had gone out of their way to do it up?
Wangaratta. You're
Wangaratta.
Reviving Wangaratta.
Without any push or shove, just to do it off their own bat. So, no, Mel, it's not for you. It's broader than that. So it's much bigger than that. What I was going to ask you was, of all the champions in the lyrics... You know, Fernando Bale's arguably the number one, but he could easily be the number 10. But why is he such a superstar to you, Fernando Bale?
Well, I watched him race and, you know, unbelievable the amount of Group 1 wins. His temperament's incredible. And plus I've had a lot to do with him as a stud dog working reproduction here. I've just seen how many group dogs he's thrown, how many winners, and how he's going to be so popular for so long. I've done Frozen Semen here for so long, and I can see in 15, 20 years people will still be after his Frozen Semen. I've never seen any dog with that much interest in the 28 years here.
And Mel, he's with Paul Westerveld, isn't he, the stud master? And we've had Paul on the show a number of times also, and he's so professional, so well-spoken. He featured in the video clip as well.
Well, yeah, had to get Paul Westerveld.
Yeah, had to get Paul Westerveld. But, but Mel, it was also at a time where Paul Wheeler had not long passed away. But you had his approval of this too, didn't you? Because a lot of his dogs have featured in the lyrics. And, yeah, like you mentioned, there's some lyrics that perhaps are hard for some people to hear and they don't want to hear, but it is our history. But you had people like Paul Wheeler, the Britons, Adrian Scott, full support. So you had a lot of people supporting you. But it must have been a time, a bittersweet time for you with the passing of Paul.
Yeah, it was. It was when I'd done it and it had been recorded, I contacted Nicole Wheeler and asked for their approval. She knew about it. They were going to do a little film clip for it. So I sent it through to her, and then Paul rang me 2 weeks before he passed and said I had his full support and I needed to push forward with it, and it's fantastic. And so it became even more special to me then once we lost him, yeah.
Yeah, that's it's so sweet in so many different ways there. Now that it's actually come together the way it has, it's... It's a memoriam almost, isn't it, well for Paul and for the great greyhounds in particular, Fernando Bale. And I can't help but think that, wonder if you thought about, you know, instead of the Billy Joel song, it could have started off with, "Can you hear the drums, Fernando?"
I know, I remember when he won a Greyhound of the Year, the band played that. It was good. Mm. Yeah.
Throw My Girl in. We could come up with a, you know, like a 20-song CD if we use our imagination. Mel,
good idea.
Your legendary status extends beyond this film clip too, because I cannot believe, and I actually drove past the Gap. We were driving from Kilmore Crossways to Yay, and I went past the Gap headquarters or some large kennel system there, and I started thinking about you and that interview we had out at Sandown a couple of years ago, and every second person in the world is now walking a greyhound around. And a good friend of mine, Emily Power, she documents her love affair with her pet greyhound on a daily basis and so on. And from where it started, from where you started it, from where it is now, I think the GAP program, everyone talks about horse welfare and there's a lot of disputes about the best way to go about horse welfare in the racing game. GAP is extraordinary. I know you're not ego-driven, but you must kick back and think every time you see a greyhound walking around the streets, you must be thinking, wow, what an amazing journey GAP has been.
Yeah, GAP's been a big one for Anita and myself. That's probably my greatest achievement, I think, and, very proud of that.
Sorry, I was just going to ask, is there another chapter for GAP too? Like, it seems to have hit its ceiling as far as maximising the transition of greyhounds into the community and so on. Is there more to come with GAP in the next few years?
God, I don't know. I obviously don't have anything to do with GAP anymore. There's lots of welfare groups that have popped up, but I think it'll just keep going strength from strength, because once someone has one greyhound, they're going to get one again when that one passes, or they'll get a second one. I mean, greyhounds are just going to continually be one of the most popular breeds now, which is unbelievable from where we've all come from with none on the streets, isn't it?
Oh, it sure is, and I just rehomed one over the weekend just privately, and the updates I'm getting every day, Mel, it just... It fills your heart with a sense of pride, and just it's very overwhelming, because you know that we all have this obligation and responsibility, and you were the one that set the ball rolling. But there was a little story a couple of years ago also about Missile the Greyhound, and you did a video clip for her, the greyhound with the bucket list, didn't you? And
that was so touching.
It was. And anyone that jumps on the Sandown Veterinary Clinic Facebook page will see regular little video clips and dances with the vet nurses. I don't know how they get the time to do it. They must pop out in their lunch break, and they've got...
It's in their contract. I make them. They have to be available when I need them.
Sounds like a pretty wacky crew out there, to be honest.
Yeah, hey, they are a bit wacky.
Imagine if you had Fernando Bale as a pet, and you're walking down the street and you want someone to ask, "Hey, is that an ex-racer?" And you can say, "Well, let me tell you, I've got the CD in my pocket."
It's so many people adoption dogs who have his offspring, and they are so proud to say that he was their father, you know, of their dog. So, yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. But look, Mel, the popularity of the missile video clip, it went worldwide, and I know that really blew you away. And I think it's not going to take that long for everyone to really get a grasp of this Fernando Bale clip and just enjoy the Australian history of greyhound racing as well, with a tune that gets stuck in your head. Are you sick of the song yet? Not your song, but are you sick of the tune?
Lots of clients are singing in the waiting room. It's so funny. It's making me embarrassed.
Oh. And Simone getting the late call-up gig to appear in the film clip reminded me when, Dan, you'll remember this, when Bruce Springsteen sang Dancing in the Dark and he got Courtney Cox up out of the audience and she started dancing with him on stage.
Well,
hey, Mel,
all preempted.
We reckon Debbie Weymouth should be in the Hall of Fame for horse racing, and I know you're going to blush, but why wouldn't you be a Hall of Fame candidate in the Greyhound Hall of Fame for all you've done?
Oh,
or is this a question for someone else? And because you're going to be too embarrassed, Simone, why wouldn't Mel be a candidate to be in the Greyhound Hall of Fame?
Oh, she's got every reason to be a candidate. I think if people, Mel's very humble, so it's not like someone you see on the front page of the website or stories on the website and all that. But people who know Mel, anyone that frequents Sandown Vet Clinic or has had anything to do with Sandown Vet Clinic, will know that Mel's been instrumental in, like we've mentioned, GAP, the reproduction services of greyhounds. She's branched out into a little song, but she's just a wonderful person, and I know everyone loves going there. I've never heard a bad word about Mel at Sandown, and also Anita and Alistair there. So they're a wonderful team, and look, they are personal friends of mine, so I don't want to sound biased. I don't think he could be, because anyone who knows these people would certainly echo my sentiments. So, Mel, it might just be a matter of time. I'm not on the Hall of Fame committee anymore, but if ever I am fortunate enough to be back on there, your name will be getting put up there without a doubt.
Did you get booted from the Hall of Fame committee, Simone?
Yeah, I don't
know why.
Did you
just keep throwing in friends into the Hall of Fame?
No, I didn't, but wheels turn, don't they? And I was on the bottom of the wheel, so.
Well, Dan anyway. Got in the Harness Hall of Fame, so it can't be that hard.
Well, there you go. That's exactly right. What can I say? I'm speechless.
Simone, I'm like you for various reasons. You and I will never wander into Hall of Fames in our various industry. We've upset the apple cart too many times.
Well, Mel, and the worst thing is you do it without even trying. So maybe that is an achievement in itself. But
yeah, effortlessly upsetting people. That's what we do. Mel,
anyway,
you got my vote, Mel. Absolutely
sensational.
And Simone, while you're a mate of Mel's, you're going to be sweet. Don't worry about that.
Yeah. Oh, well, friendship sometimes outrun all the peripheral stuff, doesn't it? So,
right.
Yeah. Yep.
Good on you, Mel. Hall of Fame legend. Of the future.
To be.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mel.
All right, talk soon. Bye.
That was Melanie Tochner there from the Sandown Vet Clinic, chatting about everything greyhounds and, of course, her latest little venture into songwriting and producing, and that was the video clip for Fernando Is the Greatest Sire. And if anyone wants to listen to that song, you could just jump on the Sandown Greyhound Facebook page and you will find it easily. But I'm sure a Google search, it will already be there somewhere. And it's well worth a listen. And there are captions, so you can read every single greyhound that's in it, because sometimes the lyrics do get a little bit fast. And if you're not familiar with the dogs, you might be wondering who they are. But certainly something that participants have fully supported and got behind. And it's a wonderful promotion for greyhound racing.
She's wonderful. She will get in the Hall of Fame one day. And I just, as we said, Simone, you and I will never. Dan, is there a secret to it? Is it, you just have to be great? Is that how you get in the Hall of Fame?
Probably. I suppose so. But you've got to love Mel. The different things that she's come up with, they haven't been naturally aligned to just her role at the veterinary clinic either. And, you know, good on her. I want to support her fully with the things that she comes up with, because she does it on behalf of many other people, doesn't she? And, look, I'll be putting my hand up for a vote, that's for sure.
We could actually get a musical thing happening with our guests. We had the harness guys who did the sort of the folk singing. We had the yodeler.
David Murphy. Yeah, that's right. Katrina Fitzpatrick,
the yodeler. Now we've got Mel. We could almost form a band, Simone.
We could.
My girl?
I can't sing. My girl.
Can you do the tambourine, Simone?
I can definitely hold a rhythm. I can
Because the tambourine is the one that the person in the band, sing. The person who has got no musical talent always ends up on the tambourine.
I can remember
Linda McCartney, Dan, in Wings? She had no idea, so they just got her to bang a tambourine against her thigh. So, yes.
A bit before my time.
Come up with a top 10, I suppose, couldn't we? We did have a film and music, a movie and music show or two at one stage there, and we could easily do another one because we came up with so many wonderful, great songs or even particularly movies related to any of the three codes.
Yeah. I'll tell you who is really gunning it with his guitar is young Max. Young Max Stewart, who could be part of it. He's
Your
got
son.
The acoustic and the electric. And guess what he's doing tomorrow? This is very exciting. I know we all boast a bit about this. He's going up to Lindsay Park for a week tomorrow to ride work up on the farm up there.
Wow.
That's pretty big. Do kids, though, realise how big it is? We think, wow, that's huge. Do they take it in like we take it in?
His mates just sit on their bloody Xboxes and play cricket all the time, and he comes back from these horsey adventures, and I say, are your mates impressed with... He said, Dad, they've got no interest. And I find that a bit sad, actually. Maybe there's a bit of an issue there for racing in general, but good on him, though, and I'm going to use it as an excuse to go up, and I think there's a winery near there.
Oh, is that when you were shouting us lunch? Are you taking us to shout us lunch?
I'm doing that next week, Simone. Get off my back about that. You're relentless. I'm taking you to lunch next Thursday.
Oh, well,
and
I may even
shout the entrees.
Oh, really? That's generous.
Well, that's pretty big. I remember we had a guest on this show once who has since passed away that you promised to take out to lunch too. So, you know, with all due respect, we want this to happen sooner rather than later.
All right. Yeah, okay.
Let's just attack
you're referring
that
to Rick. You're referring to Rick or Lacey. COVID did kick in and made that lunch impossible. That's very cruel what you said then, Dan. And you and I can discuss this at Moonee Valley today. What's on today, Simone?
What's today? Saturday. The usual here, Matt. Dogs and horses and family and all the rest of it. And Traralgon Cup heats were last night on the new J-turn track. So looking forward to the final next Wednesday on Australia Day.
Terrific.
The new Traralgon track.
I'm going to go to Balnarring on Australia Day. Good on you guys. Dan, I'll see you at 10. Great show as always. Thank you to our guests and we look forward to reconvening next Saturday morning.